plastic bottles, my favourite, tin cans, glass bottles, tyres. You would boost the environment by introducing deposit schemes for them.
Yes, and I think that this is, again, it's an initiative that is a reality in places in Germany and other. It used to happen here, and it's a shame that we don't have schemes like that.
Do we get money back for putting the plastic bottle in?
That's the way it works. Basically, you when you buy the plastic bottle or the glass bottle, you in the purchase you pay a certain amount as a deposit, and then when you return that plastic bottle or glass bottle to one of the deposit bottle banks, then you would actually get your money back out of it.
A plastic bottle? So when we buy a bottle of Coke?
I don't see any reason why not. Why would that be a problem?
And what would the levy be?
It can be a deposit. It can be, I mean...
What would it have to be an incentive for us to bring it back?
I think it could be...
Is that calculated?
It depends. I mean, maybe younger people would be more incentivized to bring back bottles if they were getting 5-10p. I mean, we would have to explore how it's done in other countries, look at what the levy is there, look at the value of the various materials in terms of we know for example that aluminium and cans is a very valuable material, and it's resource intensive to produce a can, use a lot of energy. So, you know, that looking at all those factors, how much would we want to charge as a deposit? This is not something that people are going to lose any money on. It's an incentive for people to ensure they recycle. I'm sure you would love that as well.
So you would tell Tesco's and the like that they would have to up their prices. This would be a mandatory levy in Northern Ireland on anything that comes with plastic.
Plastic bottles, as I said.
Plastic bottles and not plastic packaging?
I think that you have to look at where this you could successfully implement this. Plastic bottles, you would need to have some type of barcode on the bottle to be able to return the bottle. So from our perspective, you know, that it would be unrealistic at this stage to move beyond. And there's other types of plastics that cannot be recycled as well.
So you're doing this with tyres too?
Well, this is something that we would certainly explore. And I think that when you see the amount of tyres...
Presumably you've explored it.
Yeah.
Because it's in your manifesto.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's
how much would you put onto the price of tyres for it to be an incentive to bring them back?
Because I think that
5p wouldn't work.
No, it wouldn't work. But I mean, when we see the number of tyres that end up every year being burned on bonfires, which highly toxic, of course, in terms of the persistent organic pollutants and the carcinogens that they're releasing into the local area that people are breathing in, that people are eating when they buy food that's even locally produced. All those things remain in our environment. We need to do everything to ensure that that those products are brought back and treated properly and recycled.
And Stormont has the power, does it, to impose this on retailers?
I don't see why there wouldn't be. I think that this is this is not an accepted or reserved matter for Westminster. So, yeah.
You also say that it's unacceptable that almost half of households in Northern Ireland are in fuel poverty, and that people are dying on our streets due to being homeless. It's disappointing, you say, that the executive has wasted many opportunities to ensure that everyone has decent living conditions. Mm. Is that not a bit unfair to blame the executive for people dying on our streets? Is that not a cheap shot? It's more complex than that, is it not?
Well, I think that...
Blaming the executive.
Well, ultimately the executive have overall, to a large degree, control over spending decisions, over priorities for investment. And I think that a lot of people who have ended up in the streets, it's not through, and I'm sure you're well aware because I've listened to your show many times, it's not through lack of shelter. It's through a whole range of issues such as mental ill health and such as drug rehabilitation. And a lot of these services have come under enormous pressure. We as a party recognise this, and we recognise that we need to actually invest in these services rather than actually seeing them cut away. And it's about a preventative model and as best an early intervention model that we can develop where we actually prevent people from prevent costly treatments further on down the line. In terms of the actual housing stock, there has been enormous opportunities that are wasted. If we look at all executive parties before the last election, signed up to and endorsed the Green New Deal or some form of home insulation scheme. And in the last 5 years, that money has been wasted on a boiler replacement scheme. It's in effect, you know, trying to heat the sky because our homes are so poorly insulated. From our perspective, we see this, you know, with over four in ten people living in fuel poverty, with more people dying here as a result of winter-related cold per head of population than in Finland. There is a major issue with our housing stock, and actually investing in that housing stock to bring it up to standard, to cut down on fuel poverty, to cut down on the £2 billion of energy that's literally going up in smoke that we're importing every year, and to actually focus that investment into a retrofitting home insulation scheme where we believe, in fact, we've calculated that we can, and the Green New Deal group has calculated that we can create thousands of jobs by doing that.
Under your justice heading, you say you would support payment of pensions to those seriously injured in the Troubles with a review panel to deal with controversial cases. But what's the Green Party's policy? Would you support payment of pensions to those people, paramilitaries, who've been seriously injured in the Troubles?
Well, the reason why we would establish a review panel is exactly that, is to look at those cases on an individual basis.
You're looking for a vote. So what's your party's position?
Yeah, well, we are saying that we would establish a review panel and follow the recommendations of that panel. And I think that we...
So you're indifferent to that key question? No, you haven't an opinion of your own?
It's not.
Leave it to others to decide.
I think that each individual case needs to be assessed on that individual.
Well, let me give you an individual hypothetical case. So someone has a bomb in their hand and they're wanting to plant it in Belfast City Centre and they blow their arm off. Would you give them a...
I'm not going to give them a pension? I'm not going to go into hypothetical scenarios.
Really? Because everything in this manifesto is hypothetical because it's all about a direction of travel.
Yeah.
So let's travel down this direction.
Well, in this particular instance, that's exactly why we would establish a review panel, because the complexities of each individual case.
It's not a complex question to say someone who was a paramilitary in Northern Ireland who took the law into their own hands. That is not a complex question. It's actually one that you're trying to duck out of because you don't want to annoy different
and let me
people in the community.
And let me completely empathise with the folks and the hundreds of thousands of victims in Northern Ireland who have suffered as a result of the disgraceful actions and despicable actions
of
paramilitaries.
So call it.
You know, but what I'm saying, Stephen, is I'm telling you our policy is to look at all these issues on an individual basis. So to look at all these issues
A point of principle.
Stephen, I'm telling you what our party policy is, to look at all these cases on an individual basis, to have an expert review panel.
So your party policy is to abdicate responsibility in Northern Ireland and buck off that decision to a panel so that they can take all the heat, take all the blame. That's mature politics in Northern Ireland.
I think that sometimes...
You're setting up a review panel for many other things.
I think that sometimes you need to take the political heat out of decision making, and having an independent panel helps us to achieve.
Come on, Ross. I think that stand up tall as the Green Party and have at least an opinion on this.
I'm not going to go down that line, as I've already said.
That's handy.
That's our policy. If people don't
it's not a policy, is it? You don't have a policy. Well, the review panel will come up with a policy.
And if people don't agree with that position in terms of...
You don't have a position on it.
In terms of actually helping the more than 300, I think it's around 300 people, 300 pensioners now who are... people who have suffered as a result of the Troubles, who are being denied any sort of financial support because of this political stalemate. This is one way that we can bring everybody together and try and navigate a solution. It may not be perfect, but it certainly is better than the current situation where we have over 300 people who are being denied. And that these people, Stephen, I think it's very important to recognise.
I wonder, are law-abiding, innocent victims of the Troubles disgusted with the Green Party this morning?
Well,
that you won't differentiate them
who have been
severely injured, targeted by paramilitaries. I wonder, are they disgusted by the Green Party this morning, that you don't differentiate them from paramilitaries and you leave it to some unknown review panel to decide whether they want to do that or not?
Well, from our perspective, I think that the current situation where the victims of paramilitary violence who are being denied any help or financial support, that in terms of those people not actually being able to access that important support. And many of these people are getting to the point in their lives where they are, unfortunately, many of them are passing away. The fact that we haven't resolved this issue, I and the Green Party feels that is more of a disgraceful situation. We need to help those innocent victims. Those innocent victims who are not
innocent victims.
Well, we need to help.
So if someone had a criminal offence, would they be entitled to this or not?
I'm saying that there are many out of that group of people, there are many people there who had nothing to do with any, and those are the people who are currently, with the current state of affairs, being denied any sort of support.
But you would also support payment of pensions to people who weren't innocent too, wouldn't
you? We have said that we will set up a review panel to look, and I think it
who
is
would
only,
appoint the review I the think, review panel?
Well, the executive would appoint the review panel. All right. And I think,
what would the criteria be?
I haven't got that information.
Would former paramilitaries be on that review panel?
I haven't got all that information.
Would murderers be on that review panel?
I'm sure that we would want to have a completely impartial, independent review panel who would not have any connection with the troubles and everything that went on.
No connection with the troubles whatsoever.
I'm sure that we would want to have independence, and that is a crucial thing.
Hold on a second. No connection with the troubles whatsoever.
Well, I am sure that we would want to have independence, independent oversight. And that is the most important thing.
It's not thought through.
Confidence.
It's not thought through.
No, is it? It has been thought through.
And one of the biggest issues in Northern Ireland.
I think it has been thought through.
Our past. Ian thought through.
No,
is it?
I think it has been thought through. And
right, so the criteria for appointing the review panel is what?
It would be independence, and that's one of the key criteria.
Define independence.
Well, we look at. I mean, I can give you all sorts of definitions, but we, as a party, believe that this is an issue. That's an aim that we would like to take forward.
The question is define independent.
Perhaps you would like to look it up on the computer there as you're working, Stephen. But I mean, I'm not going to define individual words. I've already made my point very clear on this, and I think that we can move on to something else.
You want to move on?
I think that
one of the biggest issues in Northern Ireland, and it's in your manifesto that you support payment of pensions to those seriously injured in the Troubles, and then that caveat, you won't take the decision. You have no position on it.
Well, if people do not like that position that we have adopted in terms of trying to resolve this issue, and that's our prerogative. But that is the position that we as a party believe is the best way to navigate what is, of course, a very difficult decision. But for us, the priority is helping those victims who are currently being denied any sort of support.
You would also, because I was reading in the newsletter a headline that the deputy leader of your party has proposed that abortion law should also see men charged. What's this about?
Well, this is actually not Green Party policy, Stephen. This is about raising the issue on how the actual abortion laws are at the moment, how they are completely unreasonable. That we have young women and women in general being criminalised for something, for an issue that is basically is incredibly unfair. Where, you know, people who can afford to travel to England, we've got one rule for the rich, and another rule for everybody else. And this was an example. You can even describe to hyperbole, making a point to raise an issue, and the fact that we are discussing it today, and the fact that it was in the media.
So they didn't mean it, or what?
Well, it's making the point that our current abortion laws, our policy as a party, is to introduce the 1967 Abortion Act. Our policy is not to criminalise men on the basis of abortions. This was about making a point, and it's worked.
This is Claire Bailey who pledged this, didn't she?
It's worked, Stephen. It's exactly worked, because we're talking
worked?
About
sorry,
it
what has worked?
Making the point that our abortion laws
did she mean it or not?
Out of date.
Would men be charged, or was she joking?
this, she raised this issue, Stephen. She made the point. It's like a hyperbole. It's an example of a making an extreme example to make a very good point.
So she deliberately went way over the top, did she, on such a serious subject as abortion? Is that what you're suggesting?
And it's got us talking about the issue.
Is that what you're suggesting?
It's got us talking about the issue, and it's actually worked. It's worked.
What has worked?
The fact that we are giving you a very clear example of how our current abortion laws are completely out of date.
Let me read out what your deputy leader wrote. This is Claire Bailey. She wrote, "This means that every time a woman faces prosecution or is prosecuted, the man can be charged and face the same penalty. This law would embed the notion that men are also responsible for unwanted pregnancies and will be as liable for their reproductive choices or lack of them as women are."
I think that when you look at this...
How does that work?
Well, exactly, Stephen. Exactly. How does it work? Because it wouldn't work. But the point was
it
made.
It wouldn't work.
The point was made. The point was made.
Are you for
exactly.
real? On an issue like abortion, mm-hmm. you're telling me that you support something that was written down, but you knew it wouldn't work... A very sensitive issue, and you're just trying to make you're trying to get some political headline out of it.
No, I have said that, as I have said very clearly, this is not Green Party policy. The Green Party policy.
It's your deputy leader that said it.
Claire Bailey, and everybody knows that Claire has actually been the strongest advocate for introducing the 1967 Abortion Act into Northern Ireland. She has worked on this continually for many, many years. Claire has been.
She even gave this a name, reckless conception, she said.
And it's triggered. What a debate has it triggered, Stephen? And exactly
did
that.
Did she mean it?
She made the point that...
No. Did she mean it? Would Claire, men be charged?
No, it's not Green Party policy. Claire was making a point. Claire was making a point of how ridiculous our current abortion laws are. That's what Claire was doing. And she made it very well.
Right, because, so she didn't mean it.
Because we're talking about it right now.
So she didn't mean it.
I made that very clear.
Make it clear again, did she mean it?
Claire was making a point.
Did she mean it?
Claire believes in the 1967 abortion.
Ross, did she mean what she wrote?
No, Claire was making a point, Stephen.
Did she mean what she wrote?
Claire was making a point. She is not...
Was it a valid point? Should men be charged for reckless conception?
No, Claire was making a point at how ridiculous that the fact and how unequal our current abortion laws are.
So I maybe I should read through your whole manifesto, and maybe I should take everything that you're saying as a party, and you don't mean it, do you not?
I am,
and you're just making points
read,
in this, and everything
through,
that you say in this manifesto.
If you read,
why
through,
don't you treat people with more respect, and what you say you mean?
If you read through our manifesto, Stephen, you will not find this in our manifesto. Our manifesto
it's
says
your deputy leader.
Very clearly.
Why doesn't she retract it if she doesn't mean it?
Maybe you should ask Claire that.
Do you think she should?
Maybe you should ask Claire that. Listen, Stephen. The point.
She's your deputy leader.
Because I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why she shouldn't. Because we're having this debate today about this issue.
So you got a cheap headline out of it.
Well, we're having we're raising the issue of how unreasonable the current abortion laws are.
Here's an idea
for many young women.
Here's an idea, Ross.
We've seen it. We've seen it recently, Stephen, and I'm sure many people at home are heard the story of how a young woman who bought pills online has been criminalised.
Is your party so desperate for publicity that you now make up statements about abortion just to get the attention of the press?
I don't think that that's true at all. No.
But you're telling me that the reason this was done in order to stimulate debate. I repeat the question. Is your party so desperate for publicity that you take a sensitive issue like abortion and you make up things that you do not believe in, that is outside of your policy, just to get the attention of the press?
I think that the issue of abortion is, of course, incredibly sensitive, Stephen. And the fact that it's been boiled down into a debate about this, about this issue, we have raised the issue of how unreasonable the current 1967 Abortion Act is. It has triggered a debate, and look how long we have spent talking about it. And
no, we haven't actually spent time talking about the issue
perhaps,
of abortion
or
should. The legislation around abortion.
Yeah.
The time that we have spent is that you are claiming today that your party deliberately placed into the public domain a suggestion of a policy that you didn't mean, that you had no intention of meaning, just to get press attention.
Suggesting, and that is the key point, suggesting that looking at the current situation, well, why should we continue with the current legislation, which is unfit for purpose, which is not equal?
Okay.
If we are going to continue down the current situation, well, wouldn't it be just as extreme to do something like this? And that's the key point, Stephen. Wouldn't it be just as extreme?
When the Green Party says in your manifesto that you would retain free prescriptions but introduce a voluntary payment scheme for those who want to contribute, is that made up too? Is that just to get our attention, or can we believe that point?
No, it's certainly, I mean, in terms of the free prescriptions, that's currently...
Sure it's not a headline
policy,
grabber?
It's currently policy that's it's in Northern Ireland, and we think that free prescriptions, in terms of the principle there of actually having universal health service free at the point of use, the principle of universal ownership over a health service that applies to everyone, as a party... we endorse that.
And what would there be? There would be a collection jar, would there, at the chemist? Or how would you do a voluntary prescription?
Yes, we will explore how that can be implemented in terms of, in practice.
Presumably you've explored it. It's in your manifesto. What would it be?
It's put
10p in the jar?
It's not rocket science. I mean, there's ways to implement this.
How?
Well, yes, exactly as you say, we can have in the chemist when you're taking your prescription, would you like to make a voluntary donation?
You would also, on agriculture, you would reduce food waste by introducing regulations requiring surplus food from supermarkets to be offered to food banks. If the supermarket owned the food, how are you legally seizing that?
This is another policy which has recently been implemented in Italy. It's a law that has been implemented recently in France. We would make it effectively... put the ban in place of throwing away fresh, unsold food. So there would be a requirement on establishing distribution networks between the supermarkets and charities and food banks, and actually to make sure that that food is not being... Because what tends to happen at the moment, Stephen, is that a lot of this excess food, nothing wrong with it, it might be outside of its... best before date, but it's still perfectly fresh. This food is being tossed in the bins and then spoiled, and it's a huge waste. It's something that, as I say, we can look at how it's been implemented in other countries, and we can adopt the same legislation and apply it here in Northern Ireland.
But what is the law around that? So supermarkets own the food. Are you seizing it? Is the state seizing the food?
We're saying that
taking ownership of it.
We're saying that if the supermarkets are going to throw away fresh, unsold food, that will no longer be permitted. That we need to set up distribution networks to actually ensure that that food goes to people. Many people in Northern Ireland are in food poverty.
Would you buy the food back off the supermarket?
No, this is not about buying the food back off them. This is about taking the excess food that is destined for the bin, that is destined for waste. We are going to take that excess food.
You're going to take it, so you would seize it.
If you want to, I said take and you said seize, but I mean, I think that this is food that's destined for the bin.
But you're talking about the state doing this via legislation, right?
It's been done in France, it's been done in Italy, and I think that there's no reason why it can't be done in Northern Ireland.
Is it done on a voluntary basis in Italy?
No, it's not.
It's not. Mandatory?
It's mandatory. You cannot throw away fresh, unsold food without going through a process to see if that food can actually be redistributed to other organisations, food banks and charities.
Planning is such a big issue in Northern Ireland because people get very frustrated with waiting times around planning. And as part of your manifesto, you say that you would give citizens, currently regarded as third parties in the planning process, a right to appeal decisions they believe adversely affect them. So in other words, if I apply for planning permission to do something, I can appeal against the planning decision to turn me down, but the neighbour next door who's objecting to it, you're suggesting, can't appeal, correct?
And I completely agree that there does need to be far swifter planning decisions made. So I'm not saying that we cannot improve the speed of our overall planning
system.
But
if you're putting another appeal process in place,
that's correct.
That'll delay it even further, will it not?
Good planning is not just about development, and it's not just about development approval. Good planning and sustainable planning is looking, sometimes you will have to reject proposals. And I think that when you look at some of the proposals that have been permitted, where for citizens and people of this country are completely disempowered from actually having any intervention in the planning process, any ability to actually challenge decisions which do adversely affect them.
And have you tested that in terms of what extra time it might put on the planning applications? Is there any type?
There's no. I mean, it depends on individual cases. You can't. Maybe somebody could.
In terms of systemically, in the system, if you introduce another appeal process into the system, have you tested what likely impact
How can you actually model that? I don't think.
Have you asked the planning service?
I don't think there is any models to actually do
Has your party consulted the planning service on this?
Stephen has had meetings with men, and one thing I can say is that when you look at planners, when you look at the professionals at Queen's University who lecture on planning, this is part of good planning, and this is something that they would advocate. So yes, I know plenty of planners that would say this is actually pushing us towards sustainable planning.
And that statement from your party, you mean that, or that's just to make a point and to grab a headline?
Everything that we have set out in our manifesto, we endorse and we mean.
Okay. You would introduce a pay ratio policy for the public sector. What does that mean?
Well, pay ratios, I mean, are looking at how it's implemented in England. There is pay ratio policies that have been adopted, or have had to be adopted as part, actually it was the Tories that introduced it. All councils have had to set out a pay ratio.
What's it mean?
Well, from our perspective, it's about moving away from the inequality which is developing within public sector pay, where we have a situation where the Vice Chancellor of Queen's University is earning around £250,000 a year, and there'll be people who will be working, either contracted or within Queen's University at the bottom tier, who aren't even getting the living wage. And this inequality has increased. We believe there is a real need to actually...
Does everybody who works within the Green Party get at least the living wage?
Yes, I would say so.
Okay.
Yeah, everybody employed.
What's the ratio between the person on the lowest wage in the Green Party compared to Stephen Agnew?
I mean, we don't have that many staff, Stephen, so I would say that it wouldn't be very big at all. I mean, a ratio of 1 to 10 is, if you take 1 to 10, it's over £100,000.
And to improve that ratio, would you put up the people at the bottom or would you bring down the people at the top?
Well, we certainly would be looking to make sure that the ratio doesn't increase, and that's the key point, is actually new people who are being employed.
So no change then, you wouldn't improve it?
New people who are being employed, that in terms of the pay scales, we would not want to see. It would be one or the other. Either the pay would have to go up at the bottom or would have to come down at the top.
Well, which have you decided to be your policy?
We have said that our minimum pay that we would like to see within the public sector is the living wage. And we would like to see a pay ratio of around 1 to 10 within the public sector. Now, that if you actually take that, the living wage and a pay ratio of 1 to 10, that's way over £100,000. That's prime. It's nearly up to the salary of the Prime Minister.
So you would cap salaries in Northern Ireland?
Certainly, we would. If people were pushing for higher and higher salaries, we recognise that as a party, it's not right that people at the top keep getting big pay rises.
So what would you cap a salary at in Northern Ireland?
We are pushing for a pay ratio. We have an aspiration of a pay ratio of 1 to 10, and we would like to develop a policy to see that.
So the public sector couldn't compete with any other place in the UK or indeed Europe?
I don't think. Well, and this is the... This
a
is
top
the,
surgeon in Northern Ireland would be capped, would
fallacy
he?
Of, the fallacy of competition, this idea that we only compete at the highest levels, because I don't think that's true.
There are some surgeons, consultants in this country who earn £300,000 and £400,000 a year. They would have to leave Northern Ireland, would they?
In terms of Northern Ireland, we have our medical staff here in Northern Ireland who are being paid less.
I'm asking you the question about the consultant. The consultant would be capped at 100-odd grand a year under the Green Party.
I'm telling you, Stephen, that in Northern Ireland, our medical staff are paid less than the rest of the UK, and nurses and some other medical staff. And the key issue is here. Ask yourself this: is that if people are being paid less to be a nurse here, why would they stay here? Why would they stay in Northern Ireland and not go to work in other parts of the UK?
Thanks for coming in this morning, Rob.